Hey guys, today I am talking with author Ryan Andrews. Ryan's not just an author, he's also a strength and conditioning specialist, yoga teacher, and dietitian. And Ryan is a sustainable food systems advocate. He has recently written a book called Swole Planet, Building a Better Body and a Better Earth. This is a great conversation with a world changer. You're gonna like this show.
Pull up a chair and buckle up. It's the Original Strength Podcast.
Ryan, thanks so much for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks so much, Tim. It's good to be here.
Can you give me a little bit about your background for those that are listening?
I've had an interesting path in the world of nutrition and fitness and wellness. So I really got interested in the world of health and exercise and nutrition back when I was 14. I took my very first weightlifting class in high school. I was hooked. I couldn't believe this secret was kept from me that you could change your movement and lift weights and change how you felt and looked. And it was such an empowering experience for me. And that really led me to doing competitive bodybuilding for several years. And then I decided to actually study nutrition and exercise physiology when I made it to college and was trying to make a profession out of everything. And as I entered the workforce after school, I really began first working with clients one-on-one, helping them to improve their health. And I appreciated that aspect of my career because it really helped me focus in on how important it is to improve our own individual health. But then over the years, I really wanted to try and widen my perspective and think about not only the individual, but how all the individuals fit into the system and how our food choices ultimately influence everything else in the food system. So not only us, when we sit down to eat and put together a meal, yes, that is influencing us and our disease risk and our body composition, but it's also having a ripple effect and influencing soil and water and farm workers and animals and all these other things in the food supply chain. And that was something that started to come to me as I was working, and I started to spend more time on farms and kind of immerse myself in the world of sustainable food production. So all that said, I went from having a very specific goal with my nutrition of sitting down and wanting to build the best physique possible, then widening and wanting to consider all these other factors in the food system. So it's just kind of a perspective widening experience throughout the years with nutrition and movement as well.
And that's what led you to, I guess, that was what fueled the passion behind your book.
Yeah, I mean, over the years, continuing to accumulate some knowledge and build and widen my perspective in this field, I it seemed like such an urgent issue that I felt like it was worth talking more about, writing about. And so that's what led me to write Swole Planet, which generally the idea is, what behaviors can we engage in that will help build our strength and resiliency while also building the strength and resiliency of the planet, really?
Yeah. So for the listeners, Ryan has written Swole Planet, Building a Better Body and a Better Earth, which is just a neat concept. And I'm sure you saw the documentary Game Changers, probably.
I've seen clips of it. I haven't seen the entire thing.
I don't know that you missed anything, but but they did link this. They had this idea that our food choices affect the earth. That was one of the things they came back around on. And I recently read another book from a professor at Duke University called Burn. And he actually went down to the caloric burn of the world when it comes to how you get your food. And the science behind it just like left my mind on the floor. I'm like, dang, everything matters. Like everything, there's a cost to everything. And that's what your book kind of reminds me too, is how everything's connected. Like there's no way we can separate ourselves and think we're just isolated from the world. Like everything we do matters to everyone and to the world itself. So it's just very neat.
Yeah. And that's really something I've noticed in working with people individually, is that at least in I live in the United States, more of a developed country. I suspect a lot of people in this country are a bit more disconnected with how food is produced. Just fewer people work in agriculture by the numbers in the United States compared to some other developing countries. So our real interaction with food is usually when it's at the grocery store. Like, that's the first time we see food. And we don't really have a grasp on everything that happened before, whether it's the trucker who drove it across the country, or the farmer who harvested, or the rancher who raised the animal. All of those things are kind of hidden, I think, sometimes intentionally hidden, but sometimes just not ever noticed. And I think if people started to connect the dots between the health of the soil and our health, and the health of the workers, and the health of ecosystems, and all these different things, I think it would give us a lot more incentive to improve our nutrition, quite frankly, because sometimes I don't think our own health is necessarily enough motivation. I think sometimes it is, but some people are kind of looking for a little bit more, and this gives us a little bit more incentive to make some changes with our eating.
Definitely. I don't want you to give anything away, because I want the readers to read the book, but can you kind of connect some of those dots for the listener, like how everything is connected, and like how your nutrition does matter to, well, how it also matters for the earth?
Yeah. I mean, the book, I really highlight, and it revolves around these five major dietary adjustments that we can make, because I really wanted to simplify it as much as possible, because it is extremely complex, the natural world and food production, for sure. And to quickly highlight the five adjustments, because that kind of, I guess, will give the listener an idea of what I'm talking about here. So the first adjustment would be find your minimal effective dose of animal products. And that really just revolves around the idea that animal products tend to require a lot of inputs, and they can be resource intensive and lead to land use inefficiencies and waste production and water use and water pollution and things like that. And it's not to say that everybody needs to adopt a vegetarian or vegan diet or anything like that. I think animals can be a really important part of the food system and really important part of the diet for some people. But just kind of bring some awareness and going into those choices eyes wide open, thinking about if maybe we can lower that consumption to a level that supports your health and the health of everything else. So that's the first one, find your minimal effective dose of animal products. The second one is minimize wasted food. We waste about 1/3 of all food produced, and that's not only a waste of all the resources that went into producing that food, but when we send that food to the landfill, it breaks down, releases greenhouse gases, so it becomes a real environmental burden. The third one is support sustainable farms. And this one is nice because it really starts to get into some of those connections back to soil and how farmers are farming and why that matters for the future of nutrition and the future of farmers and farm workers. But really, if we can support sustainable farms, farms using practices that have been around for thousands of years, and some more modern technologies that are beneficial, I think it's good for the farm workers working on the farms 8 to 10 hours a day. They're not around as many harmful chemicals. They're not applying fertilizers that can run off and lead to eutrophication and dead zones and water pollution and things like that. So that's the third. The fourth is eating a wider variety of minimally processed foods. Over half of the calories we consume in the United States are from ultra processed foods. So it's really the foundation of our diet. And that's not only problematic for our health and chronic disease, but a lot of the ingredients in those are from sugarcane and sugar beets and palm oil and things that have a lot of negative environmental repercussions. And the variety part of that one is we just have dismal variety with our eating. We really rely on just a small handful of foods over and over again. And that not only can present problems for our health, where we're not attaining a variety of nutrients to support our well-being, but when farmers aren't growing a wide variety of crops, that can create less of a resilient farm. And we want resilient farms and food systems, because those are going to be the most productive long-term. And then the fifth final adjustment is minimize single-use plastics. plastic production and use has really skyrocketed in the past 50 years. And it's really become so ubiquitous that it's really a threat to all species on the planet. And there are certain plastics, obviously, that have really made life a lot better for us. And continuing to use some of those, I think, is great. But it's really taken off. And in the food system, I mean, you don't really need to look hard in the grocery store to see plastics. They are everywhere. And even as far back as some farmers will use plastic tarps and things like that, fisheries use plastic nets and lines. So there's plastic just all throughout the food supply chain. And it's really becoming a burden to ecosystems. So those are the five main areas that I talk about in the book. And throughout each of those, I try to kind of connect all the dots between our health, soil health and ecosystems, farm worker health, animal welfare, and kind of all the big cogs in the food system.
Speaking of variety, so from a farming standpoint, what are some of the practices that are really damaging the soil? Just to give, you know, because like you said, these are things we just don't think about.
Yeah, the two, well, I guess I'll say three pretty significant things to think about when you're thinking about how we can really make soil as healthy as possible. Because maybe this will help the listener. When I think of soil, I think of a savings account. So the more you deposit now and invest in it now, the more you have long term. And we can invest in soil essentially and build it up by not applying a lot of synthetic chemical inputs like synthetic fertilizers, like pesticides, doing a lot of tilling. Those are the three biggies: a lot of fertilizers, pesticides, and tilling. Those can really harm not only soil microbes, but really kind of lead to this extractive way of using soil. And long term, we really want to build soil up rather than just extract and break it down and leave nothing for the future. So if you have a crop system set up where you grow crops rotationally, and some crops are planted to bring nitrogen to the soil, some crops are planted just to kind of prevent weed overgrowth and preserve moisture in the soil. Animals can be integrated on the farm to add manure, and compost can be added to add nutrition to the soil. So it becomes kind of this closed loop model of food production where you have some inputs from compost and animals, and you can add that to the soil. You're growing the right crops at the right times for your level of rainfall and your climate. And it's not this like disjointed system of where we just take a big patch of land and grow the same annual crop and add a bunch of chemicals and add a bunch of irrigation water and then just till it and kind of extract it every year, and that's it.
Wait, are you saying that certain foods have a season of optimal growth or when they should grow?
Yeah, so certain foods, this is actually a pretty important point. In the United States, we really rely on California for most of our foods. And that's okay. I mean, California is a wonderful place. It has rich soil and a lot of groundwater and a good climate for growing a lot of foods, but that creates problems when they're going through a drought right now, California. And so when we're really reliant on them to grow food and we're stressing their water supply even more, that presents problems for a sustainable food system. So if we were to say, let's now grow some of those foods in other areas of the United States where the climate is well suited for them and they have more abundant water supply, that can be more of a sustainable thing. So decentralizing where food is grown, growing for the appropriate amount of water and seasonality and things like that can be really important.
And that closed system you're talking about that actually helps re-nourish the land or replenish the land and not strip it from all of its nutrients and health, that actually is good for the human body as well, right?
Yeah, it's hard to feed ourselves a nutritious diet if we're not feeding soil. Essentially, the soil has to be fed for us to be fed. And when we are growing foods with a wider variety of nutrients, so a greater nutrition profile, that can really be a better situation for our health too.
And you, I'm going to go back to the variety thing, because this is neat to me, because you're a bodybuilder and you got into nutrition and, you know, kind of found your passion, hit your stride. Typically though, if you hear about, and okay, so Hugh Jackman gets ready for a movie and he produces this amazing physique with the help of his trainer, and the nutrition advice, chicken and broccoli, chicken and broccoli, chicken and broccoli. Or let's say he wants to bulk up, chicken and rice, chicken and rice, chicken and rice. But there's very little variety in that. And you're saying, no, let's have some variety. Can you just go into that a little bit, just to help people? Like, you don't have to just eat the same thing every day to stay healthy, if that's healthy.
Right. And I mean, I can relate to that so much. My bodybuilding days were definitely a very limited variety of foods, cycled over and over again. You know, I think the neat thing about thinking a little bit more comprehensively about food is you can start to experiment with different foods that can accomplish some of the same things for you. So, I mean, the chicken and broccoli and rice thing is good. I mean, those are pretty common foods. People are aware of them. They know what they taste like, where to get them. But simple swaps, I mean, I think can go a long way. So, I mean, take rice, for example. What other grain might someone have access to that they could try? Buckwheat, millet, quinoa, teff. I mean, maybe your listeners are thinking, oh, these sound great, or they've never heard of them, but it's a chance to
say what?
Yeah. It's a chance to explore other foods. I mean, and each, there are so many different grains and species of fish and vegetables and fruits and things. We go to a grocery store, we kind of see the same handful of things. But even within the grocery store, we might ignore some things. But I think it's worth trying something new. And this is where connecting with a local farm can come in handy, because local growers can grow this really unique variety of things you might have never tried. I know the first time I tried turnips and kohlrabi was when I was helping on a farm and getting a monthly box from the farm. Otherwise, I would have never known to look for those at the grocery store myself. But you can try them and see if you like them, see how, where they might fit in. And I think it's a really neat opportunity, like I said, not only because it provides us with a variety of different nutrients. And if you really want to connect it back to our health, I do have a suspicion and a theory that we get so reliant on the same foods over and over again, and we just know how to prepare them and we're familiar with the taste. Even if we might start to develop a sensitivity to the food, or we actually don't feel that great anymore after eating it, we get bloated or something, we just keep eating it because it's familiar. And when you explore a variety, you can see other foods that maybe do better with your physiology. And to take it one step further, it also extends back to the farm, where it's generally a good thing for soil. It's generally a good thing for pollinators to explore all these different foods.
What happens to the earth if we don't embrace practicing sustainable farming methods?
Yeah, if you look at the big three areas we'd need to really change to create more of a sustainable future, it's how we get electricity, our transportation system, and the food system. Those are the big three things we really need to figure out how to do them more sustainably. If we simply focus on electricity and transportation and ignore the food system, I don't think we have a chance of a truly sustainable future. And I say that not just kind of generically, but you can pick whatever ecological marker you want. You can take greenhouse gas emissions, you could take deforestation and biodiversity loss, you could take water pollution. Pick your marker. It's not going to improve or get better unless we change the food system. So we really need to make some adjustments with how we farm, what we're consuming, policies in place that support farmers, how cafeterias are set up, pretty much everything, how everything is done needs to shift. And I'm of the belief system that if it does, I think the entire food supply chain and food system will change and will become more sustainable. And if it is, I think we have a good chance. I think we have a good chance of growing food for many, many centuries to come.
I hope so. Do you have children?
I do not have children. No. You?
Yeah, I do. I have two. And I'm sure everybody listening that has kids or that wants to have kids wants them to have a future. And they probably want their children because, you know, then once you have kids, you start looking forward to having grandkids. And you want them to have a healthy, happy future, at least a shot at one. The ramifications just get to be really huge. And because it's not just us that we're messing up.
Yeah. And that's a great example of where I think you can really tap into the bigger than self goals, the greater good goals. So if you have kids and you're thinking, gosh, I want to make sure they have healthy, nutritious foods to eat, and I want their kids to have healthy, nutritious foods to eat, and clean water and clean air. I mean, we definitely need to change how we are doing things in the food system. But the way we're doing it now has worked well for certain things. It has not worked well for sustainability and minimizing chronic disease, that's for sure. It's really worked well for just producing a lot of calories quickly. That's about right.
I thought it is neat how, like you said, that point number four, I think, is that most of our food sources that we're consuming is just highly, highly processed, highly scienced up versus natural, wholesome food. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's the foundation to the diet. And it is in the United States, in Canada, in the UK. I mean, I always make the joke that if you find somebody and follow them around the grocery store and follow them through the checkout line, there's a good chance that more than half of the items in their cart are going to be ultra processed. And that's what advertisements are geared around. That's what fast food restaurants serve. That's what a lot of subsidies ultimately support, is a lot of the ingredients and crops that are processed into those processed foods. So it's all set up for that. So we definitely need to make some shifts and make it easier for people to get some of the minimally processed foods into their routine.
Yeah. I used to, when I would take some of my clients on grocery store tours, I'd be like, you know, if it has a very long shelf life, that means it's probably going to shorten yours. It's like an inverse relationship.
That's great. I love those. Those are so easy to remember. And yeah, it's definitely some truth to it.
So what's the one thing for the listener or the reader of your book that you would want people to get out of their food, like a way of eating or an idea about food?
I mean, other than the big five, I think going into your selection of animal products with your eyes wide open, I think is a very powerful thing to do. And whether that looks like making some effort to just source from a better farmer or rancher, or slightly decreasing the amount you consume and trying some legumes at some meals instead, I think that's probably one of the most significant things we can do overall when you really start to look at every aspect of the food chain. Because it has a pretty big influence on the people working in ranching and meatpacking. It has a really big influence on animals. It has a really big influence on soil and water and the future of potentially antibiotic resistance, resistant superbugs and zoonotic diseases. And it's connected to so many different things that it's a big deal, and it's worth us giving some time and attention to. And again, I always like to be very clear. I'm not advocating for a vegetarian or vegan diet. I don't necessarily think that's the best diet for every person in every situation. Rather, going in to those choices with your eyes wide open, thinking about sourcing, thinking about quantity, can be really, really powerful.
That's awesome. Once you start wrapping your head around it, it's hard not to let it influence your decisions or how you want to move forward with your food, for sure. What is the one food you can't live without?
A go-to food I really like. I think it tastes good. It's satisfying. It's pretty easy to prepare. Probably lentils. I like lentils a lot. And
really?
Lentils to me are just such a win-win, because not only legumes, people consuming legumes generally tend to have a lower risk of chronic disease, which is great. I'm interested in that. And also growing lentils, they're in the pulse family. So like chickpeas and split peas and lentils. And when we grow those crops, they can bring nitrogen from the air into the soil. So it's like a natural form of fertilizer, essentially, growing those crops. So it's good for us. It's generally good for the soil and good for farmer income. So I really like pulses in general, and specifically lentils.
Do you soak your legumes and lentils?
Yeah, usually I do. Lentils are nice because you don't have to soak them. Especially red lentils are really nice because you can do a quick rinse and then they cook in about 10 to 15 minutes, depending on your altitude. But any other black bean or like more of a traditional bean, pinto bean, definitely a nice long soak, a nice long rinse, plenty of cooking. Don't skimp on any of those. You want to make it as digestible as possible.
Awesome. Where can people find Swole Planet?
Yeah, check out ryandandrews.com. That's my website. And if anybody is interested in checking out the book, I did create a discount code for this podcast. So
awesome.
If you enter podcast, BODCAST, get 15% off. And everything on my website, you can find out more about me and social media links and all that stuff.
Do yourself a favor, check out Ryan's book. It is a great read. It's eye-opening. And I think you'll enjoy it. Ryan, thank you so much for being on the show.
Really appreciate you, Tim. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a great weekend.